Hello and welcome to the Doula Tribe podcast. I'm Tess and I'm from the Nurture Doula Tribe. I'm a postpartum doula, a mother, and I'm Irish. We will be focusing on mothers, families, birth, parenting, and the postpartum period. I'll be diving into lots of topics around raising children. I want to speak to inspiring people and I want you to learn something. So make sure you tune in. Find me on Instagram and subscribe to this podcast. See you soon. Today we have the beautiful Marion Rose. I actually found Marion through my friend Abby Stanbrook. She's a local aware parenting instructor, and I took a chance and messaged Marion asking her to be on my podcast. Was very open and willing, and here she is today. So I'm so grateful to meet you, Marion. Thank you for coming on.
I'm so glad to be here. There's a rubbish truck coming past at the moment, so it's all the things, but yeah, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you. I didn't know that about Abby. That's so yummy.
Yes. So I thought I'd keep that a surprise for you. Yeah, so we're located in Shepparton together. So I'm so happy I've met her and found Aware Parenting because I'm quite early in my parenting journey. My children are only 4 and 18 months. So I'm so glad that I have this, you know, opportunity to really raise them from, you know, quite early with this parenting style. Thank God.
Yeah, I'm so with you. Makes such a huge difference, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Sometimes I wonder what on earth would have happened for me in my parenting if I hadn't found it.
Well, that's it. So I'll introduce you. Marion Rose, PhD, is the co-author of Raising Resilient and Compassionate Children, A Parent's Guide to Understanding Behavior, Feelings and Relationship with Lael Stone. And she also has written other books on aware parenting and psycho-spiritual parenting, which are coming out this year. I'm so excited for those. Marion has been studying psychology and consciousness since 1987, and you have a PhD on postnatal depression and the mother-infant relationship from Cambridge. So you were teaching hypnobirthing and calm birth, which is very interesting to me. And you focused your attention to bringing about change through supporting parents that way. But since practicing aware parenting in 2002, you founded the Marion Method, which is a psycho-spiritual paradigm of parenting, reparenting and reculturing. I love that. And you host the Aware Parenting podcast, which has 1.7 million downloads. How good. Someday I'll get there. And you have your own podcast, the Psycho Spiritual Podcast, and you're on lots of other ones as a co-host. So that's a massive introduction, but here you are, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. I have been around for a while, so I've had an opportunity to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, it's good to know everything so that if people are listening and haven't heard of you, you know, they can really get a snapshot of what you've done in your career, which is a lot. So I'm so interested right now, and I'm wondering if you're willing to share your beliefs or your family values or anything funny about yourself to tell us about your life.
I thought that was an interesting question. You had a question, anything funny or interesting? I thought, oh, what can I share about?
It's broad, isn't it?
Family values. Well, I'm passionate about unconditional love and compassion for all beings. That's pretty much one of my core values, and to really, as we'll be talking about, I'm sure, to really help us understand that the culture that we're living in is very unsupportive of human beings, but all beings. And I'm so here to support a shift on that big cultural level as we're all doing our own part in that. And I suppose an interesting story would be I was incredibly highly sensitive as a child and a teenager and a young adult. I had a whole lot of trauma as well. So I could not speak. I hardly spoke at all, like at school or even as a young adult. If I was in a group of people, I would just cry. I was terrified.
my god,
that's a kind of funny thing. But now I love talking.
Yeah, wow.
I love talking. And I also thought I wasn't ever going to have children, and so it's kind of funny that I'm passionate about supporting mothers. And so those are two kind of interesting things, I think.
Yes. And how many children do you have?
I have two children who my daughter's 21 and my son's 16.
Wow. Yeah. You've come full circle out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. And so I wonder if you're interested in talking about what you're passionate right now in your work, like what's going on for you right now?
Yeah, I go through all kinds of phases, and I'll probably talk about this. So I've got the Aware Parenting and the Marian Method work, and so I go through ebbs and flows of like which one I'm like fully into some new project. And the moment the next project I'm about to start is all about sleep and aware parenting, because it's like a radically different, you know, I talk about the third way.
Yes, I love that one. I started listening to that podcast and it's been eye-opening, because my 18-month-old doesn't sleep. He does. He just has periods of not sleeping.
Yeah. So I'm just actually editing the Q&A I did, and I've got another one coming. So there's a whole series of podcasts on sleep, and I'm going to write a book on aware parenting and sleep. And I'm going to, I've got a course already, but I kept on breaking last year, and I kept on fixing it, kept breaking. And in the Marian Method work, I talk about working with life and conversations with life. So after a while, I was thinking, I think this might be a message for me. So I'm basically going to recreate a whole like bigger course, write a book.
Yeah.
And it's like really, it's part of my journey of offering aware parenting to more people, because it is one of the core ways that people come to aware parenting, often when their toddler's waking frequently at night. And
yeah,
perhaps they don't, you know, they've come from a more classical attachment parenting style, and they don't want to do controlled crying, but they don't know what else to do. So, or, you know, all kinds of reasons, but really to understand that we can have sound sleep and support our babies and children to be securely attached. And we don't need to train them to, you know, what's called self-soothing. And all, so many of the beliefs that are around in the culture about sleep are really where parenting just has a very different perspective. And I've just seen over the 20 years so many families' lives completely transformed understanding this and actually being able to get sleep as parents as well. So
yeah, look, I fell into that trap, but my first I didn't do like a sleep training as such, but I definitely, you know, read all the experts, and I'm doing quotations, you know, and I just kind of read some books, and but nothing of it felt right when I was doing it, and I still have like some deep grief around it that I even tried to do that with my son. But he does sleep quite well now, but it's kind of like we had to come full circle out of that. It's really interesting, isn't it, the sleep stuff. We're so conditioned around it.
Yes, and I'm sending you so much love and just so much compassion to you and to all the families. And I completely have just so understand if you're desperate for sleep and it seems like that's the only option. And I think that's often the only option that's apparently given to parents. You either, you know, you just accept that you're going to get not much sleep for a few years and your child's going to wake up early and they wake up multiple times a night. Or you do either controlled crying or some kind of version of support, you know, helping them sleep on their own. And to me, to know that there is this third way and there is a different way of looking at sleep altogether, that means we do not need to choose between, as I already said, between sleep and responding in an attuned way to our children. It's just revolutionary. So I feel ready now to support, you know, do my own part. And we're all doing amazing. There's so many people all co-creating this together. But you know,
yeah,
like seeing if I can help share this third way to more people.
That's great. And I do feel like people want this type of a third way. Like from conversations I'm having with women and mothers, like none of us want to do those sleep training type of, because it doesn't feel right instinctually. Like all of it just feels wrong. So that's really exciting. I'm so happy to share it too. I'll be on that bandwagon with you.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'm like, just, you know, for everyone who wants to share that, because I just think it's time now. And I love what you said as well about just not having that sense of something not sitting in our bodies as mothers. And, you know, as you know about my work, I'm so passionate about the whole deconditioning process and understanding that these things are deliberately put in place for us to disconnect from our innate wisdom as mothers, to think that separation from our babies is a normal thing, and that we should be separating, and that we should be, you know, all of that stuff that's in the disconnected domination culture, and really just saying, no, we're mothers, we trust ourselves, we know what our babies need, and it's certainly not helpful to be doing all that stuff that we're told we should be doing.
Yes, exactly. And I feel like that's very related to these mothers and women circles that I am trying to create, because women have been, you know, burned at the stakes and called witches to, I suppose, disconnect from each other, because they were creating magic and healing within those circles. And so it's so interesting, the history around that stuff. And one is trying to recreate that now because we feel safe enough too. So maybe this is another way of us coming back together as women, but also as mothers, to heal the world. Like, I really believe in that stuff. It's so interesting.
Me too. We're so powerful, and the DDC has tried to trick us into believing we're not, and that's, you know, through guilt and shame and all of that stuff. And for us to actually be doing all that we're doing, each of us that is doing, I think circles are such an essential part of that, to see the magic that happens when women gather together and share authentically. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's the same thing with, you know, your children. They're role modeling and, you know, seeing what we're doing. So that's another part of my questions, is around your background. So I believe that you're from the UK, and obviously I'm Irish. How have you found it, like, living? I think, did you live in the UK at some point?
Yeah, I was born there. I lived there until I was 30.
30, yes.
I'm 54 now, so still, yeah, mostly more there than here.
Yeah, so I've done 26 years in Ireland, and then I've been here 10. So, you know, it's very interesting, the contrast, I suppose. I suppose I just want to know what you think the differences are and how you have found that.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, what I'm really grateful for is that I moved here before becoming a mother, because for me, I don't know how it was for you, but when I first came, and particularly because when I was born, I was in an incubator for the first 10 weeks of my life. So when I moved here, which actually my mum's from Australia, so I did live here a little bit as a child, but coming back here, all of those feelings came up. So not only of leaving England, which I had, even though I don't enjoy the culture, I love the land and I felt deeply connected with that. It was a huge amount of loss, but it also helped me connect with all the loss that I experienced as a baby, being separated from my mother for 5 weeks. So I had a lot of big feelings to express, and I got physically sick as a part of the expression of that. And so it was a huge journey. So actually, by the time I became a mother, I was in quite a different place. And actually, for me, what I found, it was actually really helpful for me to be away from, you know, the culture that I'd grown up in and friends that I'd grown up with, because it really helped me just completely listen to myself and do what I felt called to do. And I didn't have, you know, old friends and really, you know, people doing different things, kind of suggesting stuff or commenting. I really just did exactly how I wanted to do, which, you know, included an unassisted birth and co-sleeping and breastfeeding, aware parenting, not sending my kids to school. You know, I was really, actually was helpful for me to not be around that. And of course, yes, I did miss not having what we're designed to have in a healthy culture, is, you know, multi-generational community and support. But you know, reflecting back, because I was actually in quite a centered place myself, I'd done 10 years of therapy. My whole of my 20s was based on researching, understanding babies and children, but babies in particular. So I had a quite you know, compared to many mothers, I'm really grateful that I had that foundation. So it's quite internally supported. Yeah. So actually that all worked out quite well for me, which can be really different for other people. I imagine it was not your experience.
Well, now that you say that, like, reflecting, I think I did struggle when I became a mother. So I did move here before I became a mother. But when I had my children, I really craved the family support. But the way I live my life and the consciousness that I have achieved in Australia compared to, I think, the numbing and the type of environment I was in Ireland, I would not be the same person if I had children in Ireland. And look, I would not be the same person if I had children with an Irish man. So, you know, these things all contribute. And I do think that it has benefited me also. I was in a quite toxic environment to a degree, but my mother died when I was 20. So I didn't crave that, but I just craved the familiarity of family. But, you know, her being passed probably has helped me stay here as well, because there's not that pull as such. My father is quite supportive of me being here and he visits me, and my brother as well. So it's really interesting, isn't it? Like, you can see lots of pros and cons, but overall it's a massive pro, and I wouldn't be here otherwise.
Yeah, me too. I just think there's something, you know, there's something about that, you know, and it's terrible colonization that's happened here in Australia, of course, and, you know, the you know, what's happened to the Indigenous people. And then paradoxically, we get the gifts of that, because we have, like, because there isn't that kind of toxicity that exists in the UK and Ireland. It's, you know, because it's that heavy, there's so much trauma that sits there as well, isn't there? And of course there's so much trauma here, but it's in a different way we relate to it, in a different way, obviously, because we weren't
brought up in
we weren't brought up in it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's the heart chakra of the world, like someone has told me. So it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, but it's a huge thing, isn't it? And I really just also want to acknowledge just all of these things that sit in terms of intergenerational trauma, like moving, like my mum, for example, she was born in Australia, but went to England and then moved back more recently. And so the generation, when I look back at my intergeneration and my ancestors and how much travel there was, and just again, how much that kind of really deeply affects us if we have been really dislocated from what we've been used to for generations, and all of these things, you know, have an effect.
Yeah, they do, definitely. I agree. So when you were having your children, Marion, because that's...
When I was having my children, I was born in 2002.
2002, so, okay.
Yeah. Well, and I just think it's something about, you know, it seems like 2002 doesn't seem very long ago, does it? But actually it's quite
old. Yeah, she's only young. Okay, so she was born in 2002. And when you were, like, you know, talking about having children, was that a conscious conception for you?
Yeah, I did. There was a book at the time. Who was that by? Was it Jeannie Parvati Baker? I don't even remember how to pronounce her name. But yeah, there was a whole book and a whole process. And I'm all about that. I love that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I just hear it from, like, you know, influencers and people like that. But we kind of practiced it naturally, because my partner is right into natural health. So he just did it. And it's really interesting. Now, how did you guys, I suppose, do it? Like, if you were to talk in practical terms, did you have conversations? Did you take supplements?
I did massive, like, I also did
detoxes.
There's another thing. There was a woman's whole procedure I went through. So I did, like, massive beforehand, like herbs and diet and all the things for about a year beforehand, you know.
Oh, wow.
When I do things, I'm a bit one of these people who, like, just goes all in and just does loads of research, and so it was that was me.
Oh, I love it. And you did that for both children?
Yes. What was it called? Gentle Birth Method, was that her name? And it was she's an Indian woman originally who,
I think
you've heard. And so again, I'm, you know, this is all from 20 years ago, so it'll be a bit old now.
No, it's always the best stuff, you know. Things don't change that much. People think it does, but they just rehash old stuff. And that's great. Okay, so because this is a podcast about birth, Do you want to tell me a little bit about your both your births or one of your children's births? Which one stands out?
Yes, I'd love to share both at this time. So
the
birth of my daughter was a huge process because I was still terrified at the thought of giving birth, particularly because of my birth and my experience as a baby. And there was this beautiful process where I was like, okay, I want to heal this. And I happened to be looking online and I found this thing called hypnobirthing. And I found that there was going to be the first training happening in a month or so here in Australia for the first time for people who wanted to become instructors. And actually there was a whole beautiful message from life where I was using a proper ink pen, you know, like those really old fashioned ones, and all the ink suddenly spilled out on a piece of paper, and I folded it in half and unfolded it again. And I've got the piece of paper still, and it was like an image of a birthing woman. It was like so clearly.
Oh my God.
I was like, okay, I think that's a yes. I think that's the thing.
The synchronicity of it.
So amazing. Yeah. So I went and trained in hypnobirthing, and that already just shifted so much for me. And
yeah, then, I love hypnobirthing.
And then when I was doing the hypnobirthing training, I met Peter Jackson. So he had been trained in hypnobirthing. He was the person who helped Mickey Mongan come over to do the training here. And he had trained in something called private subconscious mind healing. Mm. So I went on and also then trained in that and got pregnant and went from being literally terrified to even give birth to feeling so confident in my ability and my body and my baby to birth together that I ended up really wanting a free birth or an unassisted birth. And
wow,
because I'm a researchy person, I just did so much research and prepared on all levels. And she was posterior, so it was a really, really long birth. It was 86 hours, and it was amazing and empowering.
86
hours.
But I was
just like, and it was really hot here, so it was like 40 degrees as well. So her dad was just like watering the house all the time, putting fans and wet blankets and things on me. And we'd agreed that if he ever felt concerned at any point in time, that we'd pop round to the birth center, which was just around the corner. So
lovely.
After like 84 and a half hours, he was getting a bit concerned. It was a really long second stage. I was actually still fine. I was still relaxed. I still thought everything was fine. I didn't feel scared or worried. I mean, I was a bit frustrated, obviously. It was taking so long. So he just ran me around. We just popped into the car and jokingly said to the staff, I don't know, it was quite an amazing experience. And so I was just there for that last, I think it was actually only the last half an hour. It was actually really helpful to have them there. And
did you get in the bath or?
Didn't get in the bath. No, I'd have been in the bath. We deliberately chosen to, when we built this house, we put in a big spa bath.
Oh, nice.
So that I could do a lot of the birthing in there. So,
oh, lovely.
Yeah. So it was just helpful to have these beautiful women around me to support me in that very last stage.
Well, it was meant to be, obviously.
Which was beautiful. And, and we just stayed for like half an hour and then came home. So it's actually a really empowering experience.
Yeah. The whole thing.
And I think as I went in there with this, like, it's all fine and we're fine and we've got this, but even the obstetrician, I never really know even the names of these people because I had so little to do with them. He just stayed outside the door.
Oh, wow.
It was really, we had this confidence. So that was incredibly empowering. And then with my son, I'd done even more inner work and I'd really done a lot of research about posterior births and I'd learned this thing. Oh, I'd also then trained in calm birth. So Peter Jackson since then had created calm birth. So I become a calm birth instructor by that point. So I use calm birth with him and learn a lot about posterior. And I learned about this amazing lifting technique. And the book is just so life-changing and it's a really different approach that still a lot of people don't understand. So it's really this idea, if you've done everything you can to not have a posterior baby, and you know, for me it was my pelvis and all those things, that even though I did everything possible, this baby was also posterior. But there's this technique to actually lift during the surges where you can actually lift the whole time, and so that repositions the head, so it's actually pushing on the cervix rather than on the back. And basically what it does is it just means that the birth generally goes really, really fast. So his birth was an hour and a half, and it was an amazing experience because rather than these really strong sensations with my daughter, with him, it was whenever I ate, so it was really strong. And then when I did the lifting with each surge, and it was completely comfortable, and I was kind of blown away. Oh, I wasn't blown away, I was astounded that it was so possible. Yeah. So I will, if you want to for your listeners, for anyone who's got like a sway back or any kind of pelvic things that mean it's likely that they might have a posterior, or they had a posterior birth last time, this is just beyond amazing, this lifting technique. Anyway,
yes.
So it was also unassisted, but completely unassisted. So at home, just my then husband and my friend was here looking after my daughter.
Lovely.
And it was so empowering. And he was like a big baby, and he turned during second stage. They were just like about three surges, second stage, and he turned then, and it was just the most empowering thing ever. We did have someone come a few days later to weigh him, and he was quite a big baby. So it was me. After that experience, I was like, I can do anything.
Yeah.
I'm just so powerful.
And yeah.
Really, for my story to go from someone who's literally terrified to give birth and to have so much trauma myself as a baby to actually have that experience, it was so incredible, and I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah, wow. We've actually had very similar experiences. Yes. So my first was posterior. But I did give birth to him naturally, because the midwife that we had was a continuity midwife at the hospital, and she believed in me, and I got him out on the toilet. Yeah. And then my second was a big baby, but born at home with two private midwives, and he was 4.1 kilos. And he didn't show any signs of, well, I don't know, it was 5 hours start to finish. So yeah, very similar-ish, you know.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And I do believe that I could do anything now. Like after giving.
Yeah.
I had a beautiful water birth.
Yeah.
Did you give birth in the water at all?
She didn't feel at all called to with him. It was really interesting.
Some people don't. Yeah. Some people are just land birth, you know, like, but I love the water birth, but I was only in there for 20 minutes at the end. But yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? When you have this beautiful experience, you don't forget them ever. Like, you do not just drop that out of your subconscious. Like, it doesn't happen. So if you have a really empowering, beautiful, trusting experience, like, we feel like we can do anything. That is how we heal the world. It starts with birth.
It does. And that's where I got a full lecting yours. It goes back to what I think is like, and what I love about your work and my work and all the people that are working with this, is actually to help women and mothers remember how powerful we actually really are. And it's so important, isn't it?
It is, because it has a massive ripple effect through our families. I'm hoping that listeners, you know, really take that on and do that work, because this is how we change everything. Thank you for sharing that about your birth. It was amazing. So I know that you did a podcast on this recently. So parents experiencing stress, what do you think are the best ways for us to reduce it, me included?
Well, number one, I think the most important thing, and is that I always go to that bigger cultural picture, is in the disconnected domination culture, it's set up for us to be constantly in a state of stress, for us to be just, you know, rushing. You know, if you think about the Industrial Revolution, what happened there is like this thing of like, we're all rushing, and we, you know, we've got 9-to-5 jobs and school and all this stuff, and, you know, the have to's and the guilt and all of this setup, which really, you know, so it's what I want to say. That's the first thing, is to understand if you're feeling stressed, it's really normal and natural to feel stressed in this culture. And that is how it's design. And to understand, again, coming back to that, we are powerful within this culture, that we can actually do things differently, and even in small ways. So that can be even really, really little things, like saying no to things that we really have a no for, you know, actually doing less, and really not doing things out of this internalized, the shoulds and the guilt and the have to's. Again, we learn from the disconnected domination culture, but actually listening to ourselves and seeing all the ways that our culture forces us to think we have to do a whole lot of stuff, which we actually don't.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the most powerful things to actually connect in with. Are there things that I could drop that actually aren't important? Or, you know, could I say no to actually doing this thing? And not feel guilty and listen to the other person and how that is for them. And to also see there are really different ways of doing things that we do have power to change things. And, you know, and that might be changing your job or doing something differently, or just, you know, that there are going to be things that we can do that mean we have less stress. And then, of course, then when we are stressed, just being really compassionate with ourselves, having an empathy buddy who can listen to our feelings, getting to express the overwhelm through crying and raging, the frustration through just like, rah, and expressing that to someone else who can listen to those feelings. Someone who's just going to love us unconditionally and go, of course you're stressed. It's really normal and natural. There is nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
To have that beautiful welcoming of all our feelings. And that is it's so, so important. And then, of course, there can be other things that we bring in, like, you know, whether that is doing some yoga and meditation, or whether that is doing some lying in a hammock and doing some gentle breathing or whatever it is. Of course, those are important things too. But just, you know, I think for me, one of the most pivotal things has been really reclaiming my no's, basically, and actually just saying no a lot of the time.
Yeah, I'm a huge formal. Like, the best thing that's ever happened to me has been my partner, who's quite an introvert, and he says no to everything. So then I have to like balance our life with my FOMO and his no's. So it's like quite a good balance. But I actually am thinking of men in this, because, you know, women are so good, and you know, some men are quite good, but my experience is that men don't have that empathy buddy, or they don't have that place to go to really rage and have those frustrations met, and it's very set up for them to fail in that way. Like, women are quite good at going to group kinder dinners and getting empathy buddies and reaching out for Facebook groups, but men just don't, like some men. I don't know what the answer is to that one, you know.
Yes, I think again, you know, again, it comes back to the disconnected domination culture, the DDC, is that men get really trained very early on to not express particularly like grief and sadness, to not cry, which again, I think is why parenting is so pivotal to actually to be changing that conditioning. And yeah, I think it's such a vital thing. In fact, actually, the father of my children, who's my ex-husband now, we're really great friends, and he's also now an aware parenting instructor just last year. And he's done some amazing things with dads, and it's such a passion of his to really, yeah, just change to be, you know, part of, I know there are many men doing this, to be changing the cultural narrative for men, to actually support them to basically feel safe in their bodies to express feelings, and to really get rid of the shame sticks that they've learned to pick up. Actually, it's really normal and natural for men, as all human beings, to cry, to have big feelings, to, you know, to get stressed, to feel overwhelmed, to feel scared, to all, you know, it's more culturally accepted, isn't it, for them to feel angry and to feel rage. But that we're all human beings, and we all feel all a huge variety of feelings, and to really support that change, I think it's so important.
It has kind of gone the other way, even where we're scared of men to kind of rage, like, you know, my own experience has been like, don't shout at me, like, you know, and we can get really caught up in that, like, oh, that's domestic violence, or there's all these labels attached to things now, and it's very confusing to be in any type of cultural setting now where someone raises their voice. I don't know if it needs to go backwards a bit.
Well, and again, I think it's just the lack of, you know, support, so that, you know, I think just as women gather together, that men are designed to gather together and not be just, you know, watching the footy or drinking beer in Australia anyway, or whatever, you know, many countries, but actually getting together and wailing and raging together. And I have learned so much from him, because he was involved in men's work in London, like before we got together, and he used to share, and we actually did a podcast episode on this once, where just, you know, for men, often if their strength, they are so strong, and if they didn't ever get their rage, you know, didn't get to express that as children, it sits in their bodies just like it does for us as women. And for them to be able to feel safe in terms of they're not going to hurt someone else, and to be able to express their rage. And he shared one time he was expressing rage, and there was one man with him, and then another man, and they were all just basically supporting him so that he could feel safe, so he wouldn't be, you know, hitting or hurting anyone, but they were just there kind of holding him to make sure he knew that actually it was safe for him, that he wouldn't hurt anybody else. So I think that's a really tricky thing for men to know. How can they, you know, and it, I do think it needs to be groups of people and probably other men. I don't know how it works, whether, you know, sometimes that can be it with women as well, but just to, so that they know that their rage is safe for them to express. And, and I think we just need more spaces for that kind of thing to happen.
Well, I'm passionate about women's circles, and my partner's passionate about men's circles, so watch this space.
Fantastic.
You know, because this is a really, it's a gap in society, we believe, you know. Thank you for sharing those insights.
I'd love to share another couple more actually that I learned from him. One was that he used to work with Maladoma Somme, which was he was an indigenous man from I don't remember which African country, I'm so sorry, I think in East Africa. And he said in his culture that a man who didn't cry he was not a safe person to have in their community. So if they had people who perhaps had gone out and gone into the West and then come back again, if they didn't cry, they were seen as being an unsafe person because they had all that unexpressed feelings sitting in their bodies. So isn't that powerful?
Well, I believe that those Indigenous communities know so much more about, you know,
everything.
Everything. But these kind of like feelings and culture, like they do a lot of rites of passages.
Exactly.
And that, you know, it's so important for identity. And this is the thing that we are lacking. And I grew up in a Catholic community.
Yes.
We're just oppressed. Everything is just swept under the rug.
Yeah, guilt is supreme, isn't there, in that Catholic upbringing. And again, that colonization, and that's what I see. It started with the Romans, what came before them, and it just still has so much power. That's
it does. It really is.
Free from that is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, and visiting those countries and those tribal communities can be so eye-opening, can't it? Like, especially for men. And those kind of rites of passages are so important for our culture. We need to bring it all back, I believe.
Yeah, me too. And actually, I've been having lots of conversations with him recently about this. And because my experience is, and I wonder if it is with yours as well, as women, if we give birth, you know, I really want to include all women here who, you know, adopt as well. But if we do go through that birth process, well, you know, as women, we're constantly being connected with our bodies, with feelings, because we have, you know, we have our menstrual cycle, and then we get pregnant, and then we give birth, and then we breastfeed, you know, if we're fortunate enough to get to experience those. So we're constantly being invited to be deeply connected with our bodies. And we have these natural rites of passage. And again, yes, we don't have enough of that externally in our culture, but yet there is some internal process that changes us. And I see so often, I'm sure you do, is that, you know, women get really radically transformed through giving birth, but there isn't an equivalent. So men need those external rites of passage even more than we do, because they don't have that happening within their bodies. So that's why I think it's so often really hard for men when they become dads, because for them it's like they haven't had a massive thing. They haven't gone, I mean, it's big, but it's not like giving birth. So I think it's really important for, even more important for men to have those rites of passage back. But it's important for all of us, and the Indigenous cultures are, you know, we really need to be learning from them.
We do. And I did learn a new word the other day, patrescence. So there's a male version of matrescence.
Of course there is. Oh my God, why didn't I not even think of that?
There you go. So, you know, there is something in patrescence where we need to acknowledge, men becoming fathers. And how do we honor that? That's the big question now. So it's exciting the way we're all going with different offerings. Like, I think it's going to be a great year, especially this year coming out of a pandemic. We've learned so much. You know, I do think there's a lot of room for growth around these spaces. So what are your thoughts on how we support babies after birth with aware parenting? Because, you know, It's very interesting how many experts there are now in the baby space, and it can be so overwhelming as a new mother. I suppose I want to bring you to that space and help listeners understand how you can help your baby after you give birth, if there is trauma or anything like that.
Yeah, I just love a web parent. You know, that is my first love, is baby, you know, because of my own experience as a baby and my background really in developmental psychology and just really seeing. I remember when I first discovered it when I was pregnant with Lana, and when I was specifically looking for a form of parenting which would fit with all I'd learned in my academic career, but also training as a psychotherapist and like really being into, you know, I read the Continuum concept in 1992. So, you know, I wanted that. I was already kind of doing that decolonization piece, and I wanted something that would fit with all of those. And here it was, it already existed.
Yeah. So
it really held both of that, you know, that attachment style parenting and the understanding that babies and children experience stress and trauma, and that they also come, we all have this inbuilt process to be able to heal from that stress and trauma right from birth. And that was the part that I was just like, what? Oh my
yeah, God. I yeah. love that part. And so that's Aletha Salter's
that's
work,
all
right?
Aletha Salter's yeah. work, yeah. So she's the founder of Aware Parenting. She's a Swiss-American amazing woman. Awareparenting.com is her website. So I'm so grateful to her and her. And she's got lots of books, including The Aware Baby, which I really yeah. recommend to anyone who wants to find out about this. And so really just understanding, because I'd done rebirthing and all kinds of other things as an adult, but to understand that babies can heal from their birth, right from birth, like, wow.
Yeah, it changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it's really understanding basically that babies have two types of feelings. So they cry to communicate, which we know about. They cry to communicate their needs. And of course, as a style of attachment parenting, it's our role to respond as promptly as we can and accurately as we can to meet those needs. But it also understands that babies cry to heal, so that they have this inbuilt mechanism to heal from stress and trauma. But it's always, of course, crying in arms. So because that's part of what creates the healing. So it's really understanding that all babies have feelings pretty much every day to express to us. And the more stress they've experienced, so that includes, you know, how it was for us, how it was for them in utero when we were pregnant, how their birth was, how their time after birth was, that the more stress or trauma a baby has experienced, the more feelings they will have to express. The thing is, if we don't understand this and we just assume, as most, you know, most forms of parenting is assume that all crying indicates an unmet need, then we will assume that whenever our baby is agitated or antsy or crying, that there's something that needs to be met in that moment. So that's why we end up doing things like jiggling and rocking and bouncing and being on a ball and bouncing on the ball and distracting them and singing and, you know, putting them in the car, putting them in the stroller, all these things that we
are
do.
Or giving them like Panadol.
To those extents. And, you know, feeding them when they're not hungry, all of these things. And it's really understandable, because if we believe that if a baby is upset, it means there's something going on in them here and now, that we, of course, we will do all those things. And then what isn't often understood is that if we are doing something to a baby when they actually are trying to cry in our loving arms to express and heal from their birth, or, you know, the busy day that we've had, or
the separation, you
know, separation or anything.
When that child took that toy off them.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, and it continues into childhood as well, not just babies. And we do something instead to try, because we think it's a need, and we do the distracting or the jiggling or the whatever it is, and they stop crying, we tend to assume that that means we've met the need. But because in our culture, we don't understand the difference between true relaxation and dissociation. So what often happens is then we're doing these things which aren't actually meeting need. They're helping a baby or a child to dissociate or to suppress their feelings. And we can usually tell that because they start, you know, gazing, or they'll avoid our eye gaze, or they're tense in their bodies. Those are usually the two things that we can tell.
Or they can use soothing techniques like dummies.
Yes. Yeah, so all these ways. So there can be things that we do to them to suppress their feelings. So that's dummies and rocking and jiggling and feeding them when they're not hungry and singing and all the things. Or they can find their own ways to suppress their feelings. So that's usually through some fucking or thumb sucking. those kinds of things.
Or my son used to do this with twirling, his hair.
Yeah, twirling the hair, like picking our skin. Like there are so many ways. And
picking just his nose.
Picking a nose. Terrible at that. All of these things. And just to really have deep compassion. Like, of course they do, because most of us never had our feelings hurt as babies, let alone children. We live in a culture that's all about dissociation and repression. So, of course, it's going to be a massive, massive, massive journey for any of us to be able to listen to our child's feelings, let alone our baby's feelings. However, with support and with information to understand and to be able to differentiate between, you know, when our baby's hungry and when they're actually have got feelings, we can actually support them to heal from these things. And what I love about that is because when we understand aware parenting, we can understand that when we don't listen to feelings, when we're suppressing the feelings through the most loving of reasons, because, you know, we think that they've got an unmet need, those feelings don't go away. Those feelings accumulate in their bodies and they end up with all these things that we can observe. So they might be just more antsy and agitated. They might start kind of whining and having like this screeching tone. They might take usually longer and longer and longer to go to sleep. They'll wake up more at night, even though their tummies are getting bigger. They're just more antsy and agitated. And these are all, from an aware parenting perspective, accumulated feelings. So,
and do you think that they're linked with health conditions as well? Because after I did some, and it was, look, it was gentle sleep training, but I was going back to work. So we did get a sleep consultant who is amazing. And we did a very gentle version of it, no controlled crying or anything. But my son broke out in eczema not long after. Yes. And like I've read that there's a link with eczema and anger, and I don't know how true that is, but like, you know, I believe, and my instincts are telling me that he was pretty angry with me after I did that training, you know.
Yeah so I would see that too. Eczema, yeah, I would see often that, you know, we know now all the research and all the, you know, Gabor Mate's lovely book.
Yes,
you know,
we had him
on the Aware Parenting podcast and in The Myth of Normal. And there's so much research now, which is clearly, and of course, again, we know this, don't we? That our bodies and our feelings and minds are all one. And that if we're repressing feelings, it either leads generally to health conditions or to things going on emotionally. And there's that beautiful quote that he had. I wonder if you remember that one where he says, I can't remember exactly, but I've never spoken to anyone with severe physical symptoms as an adult or severe emotional symptoms who was freely listening, who had their feelings listened to as
basically. Yeah.
And I mean, it's just so clear, obvious. If our feelings are repressed, they're real things, they're physiological things, there's stress hormones, there's tension,
it's cortisol in your liver, like flooding your liver. And most liver you know, conditions are related to skin as well. So, you know, he had this extra cortisol because he was so stressed. Like, I'm just correlating. I'm no scientist. And you know,
you are a scientist. You see,
I'm a scientist.
I see science as an observational. Like, we're observing things, and you know, we're it's just as valid. Observational research is just as valid as double blind studies. Yeah, exactly.
I'm an MD of him.
Exactly. You are.
Yes, I know. And look, this is it, isn't it? Like, we do our best with the information we have at the time, but
exactly,
we don't always get it right.
Well, and we're constantly learning, aren't we?
But I'm making steps now to change that, and we as a family are gonna do this aware parenting lifestyle, and it's changed our life already. We're in a short space of time.
I love that. Well, I'd love to, if you're willing to share a bit about how it has, and I also want to share, in case it's helpful, about how I helped my son heal from some of what happened to him during his birth, if that would be helpful.
Yeah that would be great. So we have only met Abby in the last 6 months and my son has started kinder this year. So lots of big feelings, because he's come from a very small family daycare where I would consider her a surrogate mother. She's that amazing, who cuddles them, and, you know, like, she was just amazing. And so now he's in the center with teachers who don't really respond to him the way she did. So he's got lots of big feelings and there's lots of more kids. So it's been a very interesting shift for him to go from there to there. And he's been so good
at suppressing his feelings that 6 weeks after he started, they're now all coming out. So there's often we have to pull over the car after kinder or when we pick up his brother, because he seems to want to rage after or blame his brother usually, or rage about something random like the milkshake straw went in the cup wrong. Like before I found a way of parenting, I would just keep driving, and this sounds terrible, I would just ignore him and try and get home and then just deal with it. But now I know that I need to pull over. I stop the car. I put one of my children in a safe space because usually the youngest one is targeted. And then I hold my four-year-old until he calms down. And then he just looks all peaceful. And then I just put him back in the car seat and we drive home. Like, and it's just so better, much better. It has changed my life. And I have empathy buddy that I talk to now. I'm still early days, but yeah, it's mind-blowing, the difference. I'm excited to keep going forward.
Amazing. I love that. Well, yay for you all. Yay for Abby. Yay for Aletha.
I know, right? And you? And Lael?
Thank you. Yeah, because it is so powerful, isn't it, to really see when we know what's going on, and that's that raging, that crying is how they heal from stress and trauma. It's how they move out of the fight flight response by expressing the feelings with our loving support. And then they come out the other side and they're all calm and relaxed and loving and smiley. And
he's asking so much more now for attachment play. It's so interesting. Like, he's very vocal about it because he knows that he can heal from that.
Yeah.
And there's all this tickling and wrestling and specific games where he can control so that he can heal. So he's already switched on to that.
Yeah. Well, I would say, you know, they are born with this knowledge. It's just because we don't understand it, so we kind of work against it. So as soon as we understand it and we can support them come back to that natural wisdom again, it's amazing, isn't it?
It is. And it's just such a happier house, because there was, you know, a lot of me raging or he's triggering me before, but now I understand it more.
Yes.
I'm so much more compassionate for him.
Yes.
Like, I can just see the difference already in him. He's having way less tantrums now as well, and way less raging. And he used to run all around the living room, up and down couches, like he was trying to move, I think, stress out of his body, but he doesn't do that now. So I can see a difference.
Yeah, so wonderful, isn't it? And just remembering, they want to feel relaxed in their bodies, just like us. You know, when we're antsy and agitated, it's not enjoyable. It's really, really unenjoyable. So they don't want to feel like that. They want to release those feelings so they can feel relaxed, and so they can sleep, and so that they can sit quietly and concentrate, all the things.
They do, you know. Like, we were parented, but like not in an attachment way. So it's different. My dad was very attached emotionally in a way, but I'm still so grateful for how attached he was to us emotionally, and we still are.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
So beautiful. And that's the thing, isn't it? I always say is that really, of course, welcoming all our feelings in relation to our parents, they're really welcome, but also knowing that, you know, they're a product of the time that they were born in, the family they were born into, and the culture they were born into. And I say, you know, if I'd been born at the same time, the same family, the same guy, I would have done the same things. Like, you know, it's just really understanding that the information wasn't available.
That's exactly it. And, you know, it's very interesting, all that stuff, coming from an Irish Catholic background as well, and seeing the difference here, you know, and how people are parented here. And it's very interesting. I love it. Okay. I would love to hear about your son.
I'd really like to share this because I think it can be really helpful. I would love to share that. So as I shared, he had that really quick birth and posterior. So even though it was very intense for me, but it was also really intense for him.
Mm.
So what I realized, well, it was so obvious, as I put him to my boob for just after he was born, he clenched on really hard and it was excruciatingly painful for me. So I was like, oh, straight away, I because I'm so grateful he wasn't my first baby, because I wouldn't have known, you know, I knew from Lana that that is not how things are designed to be. So what I worked out is that it was from all the tension his jaw had been through from that really quick birth and turning, you know, turning in during that second stage. So what I did, I'd already had been having craniosacral, and he had a craniosacral session the next day, but I listened to his feelings right from then. So right on that first day he was born, I just held him in my arms and I said, I'm here and I'm listening. And he had a really big cry in my arms. And after that first cry, then I gave him some boob and he already was much more relaxed in his jaw. And then he had another big cry and I fed him again and he was even more relaxed. And after the third cry in my arms on the second day, his jaw was completely relaxed and feeding was really comfortable.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm so incredibly grateful that I knew about aware parenting, and that actually, you know, babies can often heal and release actually physical tension that they experience during birth. I do also think craniosacral is really amazing and recommend that as well to everybody. But to know that he had that capacity to do that himself with my support. And, you know, I see so many people with feeding challenges with their baby, and I wonder sometimes whether, you know, either some craniosacral or actually listening to their feelings, whether that could actually support some of that to shift.
Yeah.
It can be an enjoyable process. So we went on and had a beautiful breastfeeding relationship. So you know, our babies are so wise. They know exactly how to heal from birth trauma, and they will often, you know, get in particular positions that replicate their birth. They will often, when they're crying in our arms, they will often arch their backs to revisit their birth. And you know, there's and children will do the same. They'll get in tunnels, they'll get in positions, you know, they will constantly be trying to revisit so that they can actually heal from the experience, which is so amazing to not carry that around for the rest of their lives. Or for us as women, you know, that often our own unhealed birth trauma will come up when we're giving birth. So isn't that amazing to support them so that that doesn't happen?
I know. And I was just thinking it's the same for women during birth, because if we have an unsaid fear or, you know, some kind of an emotional attachment to something, our uterus and our cervix might not open. And it can really stall women. And yeah, it's very interesting. And Ina May Gaskin has done a lot of work around this and writes it really specifically in her books about how women in the farm have had numerous issues around not being able to give birth because of unmet emotional fears or desires or whatever, you know. It's just something that affects the mind, body and spirit. So same for babies.
We're so wise. We have the, you know, if we have the support, and that's the thing, isn't it, whether it's a baby, having someone who understands this and feels calm and relaxed, which I would never have been able to do if he was my first baby. There's no way I could have held my daughter on day one and go, sure darling, you know, I trust that you're really safe and well and you can tell me your feelings. No way. So that's why we need, don't we, we need doulas, we need women around us who have traveled before us, whether that's during birth, to be able to express what we really need to say, to feel safe. But for babies it's so similar, to feel safe, it can be heard. It is
And we are, you know, we're people who need people. We're belonging, we're all about belonging. So it's an interesting thing that we've gotten so isolated over time. And what is that about? We need to question that. And they really tried to isolate us during the pandemic. So what's that about?
Yeah. Well, you know me, I think it's all about the DDC, the disconnected domination culture. The more they can, you know, the disconnected domination culture conditioning can persuade us that it's, you know, all the things, it's natural to be separated from our culture. It's natural to be babies, to be separated from our, you know, all the things. The more they do that, the more power that they can have over us. So that's why connection is so essential to reclaiming our power, which is why what you're doing with the mother circles is so vital.
It's a revolution, isn't it, really? It's amazing. How can people connect with you, Marion? And, you know, what's an offer at the moment, because I'm sure people would be interested after
Thank
this.
Thank you, lovely. Yes, I have a website, marianrose.net, and I have lots of free courses and paid courses. And then I have the Aware Parenting podcast and the Psycho-Spiritual podcast and the Aware Parenting and Natural Learning podcast with my dear friend and colleague, Joss Golden.
Yes.
Instagram _ Marian _ Rose _ Facebook, Marian Rose.
Lovely. Easy. I'll put it all in the podcast description too. And it was so beautiful to meet you today. I'm so happy this happened. So
lovely. I really enjoyed connecting with you too.
Yes. And thank you so much. And we will definitely keep in touch, because I think I'm going to be, working in this space for a while.
Yeah, I have that sense too. We've got a connection here, haven't we?
Yeah. It's definitely one thing after the next with me. I'm kind of always led down a pathway that I'm meant to go, and I'm really good at following it, so I'm excited.
Yay for you. I'm sure it's going to be wonderful.
Yes, thank you, and we will talk soon.
Thank you, lovely.
I hope everyone enjoyed today.
Me too.
1 amazing podcast that was. Marian is so inspiring. I am very excited, and I just really hope you got a lot out of that one, because I did. We did really speak about core issues that I think is affecting women and children today, and men. So I'm hoping that this is the time for change, and people that are listening to this podcast really feel that, you know, there's people in this space that want to change things for families and parents. So get in touch if you have any questions, and make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Thank you for being here today. See you later.